Welcome to Blog Talk Radio in high fidelity.
Divine, all blessed, peace and love, joy and prosperity. You are now listening live to the Divine Prince, Pan-African spiritualist, practitioner, author, and advisor, Elagun, Oloye, Hudu, Obeya, Bokur, sharing with you in all things spiritual, mystical, metaphysical, cosmic, universal, evolutionary, revolutionary, healing, and holistic from a Pan-African hoodoo world spiritualist perspective. Understanding that all is truly and indeed a blessing if you can just see beyond the veils, for it is all just an illusion and a test and one of the greatest divine mysteries of this life cycle. This is my constant prayer, my mantra, affirmation, reverberation, reiteration, and my ever-living reality. It is crucial to the very foundation of my inner standing, my teaching, my walk, my works along this divine, all-blessed life path and journey. It is how I, the Divine Prince, make sense out of all that we're challenged with here in our daily existence on Mother, Father, Earth, and it is my personal place of power and inner standing. That place from where I begin, that place from where I realize and crystallize all my endeavors, understanding that I and I alone create and co-create my divine destiny, and I alone create and co-create my divine, all-blessed reality. And so it is. Ashe, realize, realize, and it is Ashe. Today, this Sunday, June 24, 2018, I am emanating and vibrating with you and for you live, virtually, verbally, cosmically, quantum universally from this working temple of the House of the Divine Prince. Thai Potions, Hoodoo Central, Black Hawk Voodoo, in this legendary, historic, beautiful, and most enchanted city in America, New Orleans, Louisiana, the land of my ancestors and those who came before me along this spiritualist hoodoo Obeah life path and journey, passing down the great Obeah stick along with the knowledge of the healing, life-giving herbs, roots, plants, rituals, spirits, and minerals. I am using a new audio system today, so I am not calling into my show on my cell phone as I normally do. I'm using my computer. So if there is any issues, technical issues with the sound quality, please, I need you to instant message me, to text me, to email me, and let me know what the sound quality of today's show is. St. John, 2018, Marie Laveau and St. John and the Truth, 2018. Many of you know that it is a long-held tradition here in Louisiana to acknowledge and show honor for St. John. And we're going to talk a little bit first. I'm not going to digress much, but we are going to talk a little bit first about who St. John was or is. St. John the Apostle, St. John the Evangelist, St. John the Baptist, St. John the Divine. Many over the centuries have tried to divide and suggest varying people to be St. John, whereas other biblical scholars strongly hold to the belief that they're all the same person, the same St. John. And indeed, beyond the biblical references, this is hoodoo, voodoo, but we have to acknowledge the amalgamation, the syncretizing, as we have done in many previous shows, that took place during colonization, the Middle Passage. But indeed, there is a spirit of St. John that would have been known in the ancient world, that would have been known to the indigenous people of Africa, but would have manifest by different name, under different imagery. We also have to acknowledge that separate from Christendom, we're looking at a time of the summer solstice, some call summer Christmas. The birth of St. John falls around the summer solstice. People have celebrated for centuries with food and offerings and bonfires on the traditional eve of the feast to acknowledge the summer solstice and the celestial implications of all world religions, the celestial implications of life, if you will, in our position among the planets in the universe. John 24 is one of the oldest of the church feasts. It is the birthday celebration of St. John the Baptist, and it's sometimes called Summer's Eve. The eve of the feast, great bonfires were lit as a symbol of the burning and brilliant light St. John, who pointed out Christ in this world of darkness. We cannot belabor too much on the Christian implications of St. John, otherwise we lose our timing for the show. We have to look more at the spiritual, pagan mysteries behind St. John to acknowledge why so many years later we still have this presence of St. John in our cultures, in our society, within our religions. The solstice fires had been pagan, but now they're being blessed by the church in order to honor St. John. There are actual blessings for the bonfire in the Roman liturgy. Magical and superstitious elements of food and drink were forgotten, and we were encouraged to have great picnic feasts out of doors around the blazing logs in order to Christianize an otherwise pagan, the old world practice and tradition. The church amalgamated, consumed, devoured many cultures and traditional truths, and where they could not destroy them, they sought to conquer them, syncretize them, amalgamate within them. One of the mysteries around St. John and why Marie Laveau would even have had, not only Marie Laveau, but any practitioner of voodoo, African indigenous spiritual traditions during that time, would have had a connection, knowingly or empathically, to these powers that I'm going to try and share with you today. One of the first things that we don't hear the church talk about in relation to St. John very often, and that is the Book of Signs. In Christianity, the Book of Signs refers to the first main section of the Gospel of John, following the hymn of the word and preceding the Book of Glory. You Bible scholars out there know what I'm talking about. For those of you who don't read the Bible, St. John is not a very big book. It's very easy to go in and validate some of the points that I'm about to bring out to you today. It is named for seven notable events, often called signs or miracles. Signs and miracles resonate when we think about voodoo, when we think about an enslaved ancestor seeking power beyond the white man, power beyond the physical reality that we may have found ourselves in. And so we acknowledge these deities. Moses is another one, not for their Christian cover, if you will, but for a deeply rooted indigenous voodoo power that we associate with these images that we now use to conceal, to syncretize, to hide our true feelings, our true beliefs. The seven signs are changing water into wine in Cana, which is in the book of John, chapter 2, verse 1 through 11, the first of the signs. The second sign, the healing of the royal official son in Capernaum in John, chapter 4. The third sign, the healing of the paralytic, the paralyzed man at Bethesda in John 5. The fourth sign is the feeding of the 5,000 in John 6. The fifth sign, Jesus walking on water, is also John 6, verse 16 through 24. The sixth sign, healing the man from blindness, who was blind from birth, in John 9. And the seventh sign, the raising of the dead, the raising of Lazarus, in John 11. Now, some of you immediately attribute these miracles, these signs, to Jesus. And there indeed are other signs, other seven signs. Some disagree with the list of these seven signs. John Marsh and Stephen Molly, among others, have suggested six initial signs, seeing the walking on water as part of the feeding of the 5,000 rather than a separate event itself. And that the seventh sign is the crucifixion of Jesus. Anthony T. Savoggio replaces walking on water with the cleansing of the temple, because John 2 includes the word sign in verse 18. John 2 verse 18 includes the word sign. And an eighth sign others would include, such as John Hutchison and E.W. Bollinger, have emphasized a sequence of eight signs concluding with the miraculous catch of fish recorded in John 21 verse 1 through 14. And so we have to ask then, who is John? John was always present when these events happened, or near to when these events happened. We know, if we understand the history, which I'm trying to pull up right now, that John was the son of Zebedee, a Galilean fisherman. And our Masons and Shriners and those who study mystery systems know that there's a deeper meaning to fishermen and the usage of fishermen when we find it recorded in the Bible. Was the son of Zebedee, a Galilean fisherman in Salome. John and his brother St. James were among the first disciples of Christ. And in the gospel according to Mark, he is always mentioned after James and was not the younger brother. His mother was among those women who ministered in the circle of disciples. James and John were called Boanerges, B-O-A-N-E-R-G-E-S, or sons of thunder, sons of thunder, because of some character trait, such as the zeal exemplified in Mark 9 and Luke 9, where John and James wanted to call down fire from heaven to punish the Samaritan towns that did not accept Christ. John and his brother, together with Saint Peter, formed an inner nucleus of intimate disciples. In the fourth gospel ascribed by early tradition to John and known formally as the Gospel according to John, the sons of Zebedee are mentioned only once as being at the shores of the seas of Tiberias when the risen Lord appeared. Whether the disciple whom Jesus loved, which is another long-held tradition. And that disciple was never mentioned, but it's often attributed to, is often identified to be John. And that is not clear, but it's also now part of the mystery of St. John. John's authoritarian position in the church after the resurrection is shown by his visit with St. Peter to Samaria to lay hands on the new converts there, It is Peter, St. James, not the brother of John, but the brother of Jesus, and John that St. Paul successfully submitted his conversion and mission for recognition. What position John held in the controversy concerning the admission of the Gentiles to the church is not known. The evidence is insufficient for a theory that the Johnian school was anti-Pauline to granting Gentiles membership into the church. Other less known but bigger part to the controversy is the scripture attributed to John that are not included in the Bible. The Acts of John. The Acts of John is a second century Christian collection of Johnian narratives and traditions, long known in fragmentary form. They're not in one book, if you will. They've been broken up over the centuries. The traditional author was said to be the one, Lucius Carnus, a companion and a disciple of John. The Acts of John is considered one of the most significant of the apocryphal apostolic acts. It preserves strands of early oral traditions about the beloved disciple and sole apostolic author of a canonical gospel text. The Acts of John describes several journeys of John, tales filled with dramatic and miraculous events, anecdotes, well-framed apostolic speeches. Many of these reveal strong doctrinal tendencies in the John tradition. And at least one episode is really quite amusing. It's called The Tale of John and the Bedbugs. But our text that I'm going to post in just a minute on my Facebook page also contains two extraordinary mystical sections, which are in character distinct from the rest of the document, the Acts of John. The first recounts the sacred words and actions of the Christ on the night before his death. This is followed directly by the second, recounting the vision John received of the Christ at the moment of the crucifixion. The first section has been in modern times titled The Hymn of Jesus, and very likely preserves a text used in the liturgy of at least some Johnian communities. The vision text that follows, sometimes titled The Mystery of the Cross, illustrates with great beauty the mystical depths penetrated by Johnian Christology. These two sections make the Acts of John a crucially important document for understanding the visionary and Gnostic underpinnings within the tradition of John. They are important companion texts to the Apocryphon of John. The Apocryphon of John is another document that it comes from the Christian realms, but the Christian powers that be don't authorize it. Consider these books, these texts, heretical in some sense. Also, you want to look at the Hymn of Jesus for more extensive commentary on the Acts of John. Though the Acts of John was condemned by Orthodoxy as heretical, it found a perpetual place in many monastic libraries. Many mystery systems still rely to and study and research through these books and many others. A large fragment survives in Greek manuscripts of a widely varying date. The surviving Latin fragments, by contrast, appear to have been edited with an eye to purging all unorthodox content. The following translation that I'm going to post on my Facebook page in a few moments is from the 1924 Oxford edition by M.R. James. This old edition has undergone recent revision, and we recommend you reference the new print edition called the Apocryphal New Testament, a collection of apocryphal Christian literature in an English translation by J. K. Eliot, Oxford University Press, 1994. And there'll be link information associated with the post. This is really why and how we associate New Orleans voodoo, Marie Laveau, our survived ancestors who survived hell and back to make it to the time of the 1700s and 1800s to then supplant the seed of greater wisdom, greater power, greater information unto us. And of course, by way of technology, some of you know I'm a little bit tech savvy, and I've been doing a great deal of research, particularly where my ancestors are, Louisiana. Not only a better understanding of who I am, but a better understanding of voodoo and all of its various and diverse forms and manifestations and how it made its way into our practice, our spirit, our souls, our DNA. Don't acknowledge St. John for any Christian reasoning. We look at imagery of St. John and see the symbols of greater understanding, of greater power. And this is why these saints continue to be a part of the amalgamated manifestation of voodoo and ATR in the New World. Many of us to exercise, to separate, to create what is purely and authentically African or purely and authentically indigenous, without doing any homework, without doing any history, without gaining an understanding of the environment in which a seed is planted and then cultivated. I posted earlier today an article about a man in a time before Marcus Garvey, about wanting to return to Africa or to escape north was often symbolic in many songs and many traditions from antebellum South with freedom from enslavement. So sometimes we literally wanted to go north, and so Canada was the symbolic destination, if it's not the literal destination we were trying to achieve. And in other cases, that destination indeed was the continent of Africa itself, the motherland, if you will, itself in its most literal terms. The man's name is Henry Adams, who was an entrepreneur, a political activist, a leader of Black immigrationist colonizationist movement in post-Civil War Louisiana. Born a slave, Newton, in Newton County, Georgia, March 16, 1843. He was self-educated, married a slave named Melinda, the property of a different owner, had children, Lucy, Raina, Josephine, Henry, and removed with his master's family to Louisiana-Texas border in 1850. Separated from his wife and children, following death of his owner, became the property of Nancy Emily Adams, whose surname he assumed in April 1865 at the time of his emancipation. He resided in DeSoto Parish near Longsport, Louisiana. Following emancipation, roamed the countryside as a peddler, as a vendor. You've heard me talk about vending being a uniquely African thing that we birthed here in Louisiana. Enlisted in U.S. Army September 10, 1866, served in the 18th Volunteers and in 25th Infantry at Shreveport, Greensville, and Fort Jackson. Rose to rank of Quartermaster Sergeant. Tour of duty ended mid-September 1869. He returned to Cato Parish, Louisiana, to work as rail splitter and plantation manager for a corporate-owned plantation near Shreveport. Functioned also as faith healer, who doctors would often mass as a faith healer. And even as a faith healer, I think that would have been a pretty audacious, bold public title to take during that time. And he assisted freed men with reading legal documents and accounts. He acquired property, active in area politics as president of Shreveport Republican Club. In 1874, organized Blacks recommending opposition to white intimidation of freedmen, fired from his job for political activity. He worked briefly as an undercover agent for 7th Cavalry investigating terrorist activity of the White League. The White League predates the KKK. Despairing under continuing investigation, Despairing under continuing investigating terrorist activity. I'm sorry. Despairing under continuing white intimidation and bulldozing tactics, he shifted to Black immigrationist position, assuming leadership of colonization council. of the Colonization Council. I'm trying to read something that's written in antebellum South phraseology. So please bear with me. Because he was being disparaged by continuing white intimidation and a tactic called bulldozing, he shifted his focus to Black immigrationist position, assuming leadership of the Colonization Council, seeking federal aid in removal of Blacks to the North, or failing the ability to move to the North, helping these Blacks to then be moved to Africa. Organized National Colored Colonization Society based in Shreveport in 1877. He claimed to have enrolled 98,000 Blacks who were interested in the immigration list and immigrating back to Africa. He testified in 1878 in New Orleans before the Senate Committee investigating white chicanery and violence in elections of that year. Fear for his life included his return to the Shreveport area. Work for immigration continued in New Orleans with both the Kansas Exodus movement called the Exoduster movement, and with the American Colonization Society supporting Black immigration to Liberia. Sustaining himself with odd jobs and part-time employment in the Customs House and the U.S. Mint, he was last heard from in 1884. His whereabouts after that are unknown, as are the date and circumstances of his death. J.H.D. sources, U.S. Congress, Senate, report and testimony of the Select Committee of the U.S. Senate to investigate the causes of the removal of the Negroes from the southern states to the northern states. Three volumes, 42nd Congress, Second Session, Senate Report, number 693, Washington, D.C., 1880. And there's a little bit more information attached to that that I'm going to post or repost, because I already have. And we can assume without much imagination that Henry Adams would have been lynched. We continue to allow our great ancestors to be lynched when we romanticize a few, often without even knowing the entirety of their story, and then not continue to speak the names of the many who fought in the battle, who fought in the war for our survival, that we might live. That's why we stand on the shoulders of great ancestors. That's why we have our very being today. For every house nigga, field nigga that y'all allow to come out of your mouth, we stand on their shoulders today because of their survival. When you say house nigga, field nigga, you erase, you blow a dark cloud of smoke that prevents people from seeing the details of this information. Now listen, Henry Adams' story ain't new. You all just choose not to read. You all just choose not to research. You all just choose not to acknowledge. If you knew, you would acknowledge, especially in this day of memes and people seeking, you know, the quick like response posts. You are your living material. if you would just do the research. We acknowledge and honor Marcus Garvey, but let's not pretend like Marcus Garvey created liberation. Let's not pretend like liberation began with Marcus Garvey. Let's not pretend like our ancestors prior to the Marcus Garveys and the Malcolm X's and the Dr. Kings and the Nat Turners didn't fight for anything. Let's not pretend that they are an apparition. Let's not pretend that this force, that these spirits don't still exist within us today. We are only errant and not doing our homework. I implore you today to do the homework. I implore you today to embrace your lineage, to embrace your ancestors, to embrace your heritage, and to become knowledgeable, empowered by your knowledge of who and what we are. Remembering that all is truly and indeed a blessing until next time. I hope to broadcast on tomorrow. I could be filming though, however, but I do hope to broadcast on tomorrow. Until then, all is truly and indeed a blessing. Ashe.
Congo Square. The Omis Indians prepared this place for us centuries before our arrival. A sacred spot where corn festivals were celebrated. The Omis Indians prepared.
My apologies, caller. I ran out of time. For us.
Centuries before our arrival. Congo Square, a sacred spot where corn festivals were celebrated. And as the colonizers came, our hosts, the Omis Indians, they pushed aside our hosts. The colonizers came and pushed aside our hosts and introduced us in chains. And by the late 1700s, we somehow, recognizing the sacredness of Les Places de Congo, we somehow, and the how of our somehow persuasive methodologies is not clear at this moment. The how is not clear. How our persuasive methodologies worked is not clear at this moment, but nevertheless, even as slaves, we crafted and created a space where we could be free to be we. And thusly we countered the sacrilegiousness of the French, giving great homage to our ancestors as well as giving praise and thanks to our red-blooded brothers and sisters. This is an oral libation toast to Congo Square, to Native Americans, to our ancestors who made a circle out of a square and gave us a way to stay ourselves, save ourselves from the transformatory ugliness of America, which refuses to recognize the spirituality of life. Which refuses to recognize the spirituality of life and celebrates death with crosses and crosses, double and triple crosses, the middle passage, the first cross, Christianity, the double cross, and capitalism, the ultimate triple coup de grace cross of our captivity. But the terror of crosses notwithstanding, we sang. We beat. We...